You are Locked On Bulls, your daily podcast on the Chicago Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome to another episode of Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audio Boom, Google Play, TuneIn, pretty much anywhere you can find podcasts. Leave us a five-star review. Email us with any basketball questions or advertising inquiries at lockedonbulls@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at lockedonbulls. Like us on Facebook at lockedonbulls. Check out the other podcasts in the Locked On Podcast Network. Check out Locked On Bears with Arthur Arkush if you want the inside scoop on that really tough loss they had to the Eagles last night. That was not good. I'm Sean Hyken. With me, as always, Cody Westerlund. Over-unders have been released by the Westgate Superbook in Las Vegas.
38.5 wins, I believe, the Bulls initially come in at, which is a better winning percentage than the aforementioned Bears are probably going to have.
Yeah, I would think so.
As we look ahead to the Chicago sports landscape, Cubs doing great. Bulls are kind of in the middle there. The prognosticators in Vegas think they'll be a little under 500, probably. I think we've mentioned this a few times on the podcast before, and we'll get into probably the reason today why we think this is we're doing a backcourt wings preview for the Bulls as we continue our series of kind of position previews.
We did point guards yesterday. We got bigs coming tomorrow.
Yeah, and we're thinking, though, I mean, the Bulls' hope, obviously, for that over-under win total going over lies a lot in the backcourt, but we want to see training camp before we put an exact number on how many wins we think the Bulls will have next season. At this point, I hedge over a little bit on that. Are you of the same mind on that, Sean?
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking over as well, just because the Bulls were such a mess last year. With everybody was just so checked out, and it was just the most miserable team. They had no identity. They were transitioning from an old coach to a new coach. And they won 42 games. I think they're going to crack 40. I don't know how high it's going to go. Well, again, we're going to talk about that maybe in more detail later on when we get closer to the season, once we get past training camp and we see like if there are any injuries or what the rest of the East landscape looks like, or we've seen a little bit of preseason. But I think 38 is like around at the low end of what I would expect them to win. So I would take the over on that.
Yeah, the Bulls have Jimmy Butler, who top 15. Player in the NBA, somewhere in that range, you can argue, kind of on the fringes there. But he's obviously the headliner of their backcourt, and we're going to get into that today with the preview. Alongside Jimmy Butler will be Dwayne Wade, starting in the backcourt as well, after he shockingly signed a two-year deal with the Bulls back in early July in free agency, after his long career with the Heat. We do want to point out, we'll kind of take a look at the rest of the Bulls' backcourt, the way it looks, is Doug McDermott's going to get a lot of playing time on the wing off the bench. It figures Tony Snell's still in that mix a little bit. Denzel Valentine is the rookie from Michigan State, who the Bulls took in the first round this year. They like a lot. Kind of an experienced college guy. And then we're going to include Paul Zipser in there. I think he's listed as a small forward in most places, a 6'8" guy we don't know a lot about out of Germany. But I think that takes care of the backcourt wings. Obviously, you touched on the point guards with Rondo, Cannon, Spencer Dinwiddie, and Jaren Grant yesterday. But just initial impression, Sean, Bulls backcourt, strength of the team?
I mean, just by default, it kind of is, isn't it? Just because everywhere else, there's so many question marks. So here's the thing. I mean, I alluded to this a little bit yesterday when we were talking about point guards and just how Rondo was going to mesh with some of these guys. But I kind of feel like the way to play this for Fred Hoiberg is to stagger a lot of the minutes of Butler and Wade, rather. Just so that, I mean, because obviously they're going to both have to be in the starting lineup, and they're probably going to play the first 5 minutes or so of the game together, just because that's going to be how long it takes until the first shift is made in terms of substitutions. But I feel like it would make a lot of sense for Hoiberg to stagger those two and just make sure that you always have one of those two, Wade and Butler, on the court at all times.
Because they're both ball dominant, you're saying. They're the Bulls' best scorers.
They're kind of redundant to each other, and they also, the Bulls don't have a ton of scoring firepower off the bench, so if you have their entire first unit out with both Wade and Butler out, you don't really have a lot of reliable scoring. So I feel like they should try to make it so that you always have at least one of those two guys in.
Yeah, and I want to get back to the redundancy later, but to the point about staggering the minutes, you said you're thinking 5-6 minutes into the game, pull probably Dwayne Wade, not Jimmy Butler. Jimmy's played long first quarters before. Usually he played the full first quarter a lot of the time, if I remember off the top of my head.
Right, you have Wade play the whole... I mean, you have Jimmy play the whole first quarter, and then you have Wade... You take him out for, like, the first 6 minutes of the second quarter, have Wade play, then you stagger them...
Backed in the
from
second
there,
quarter.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that cuts into, I mean, what they can do together, but at the same time, it spreads your strength out over more minutes, and that might be a good idea, depending too off the bench what the Bulls have, because Doug McDermott, obviously, is not a guy who's going to break you down off the dribble for the Bulls. We know Tony Snell isn't that player. We have all the evidence in the world to kind of explain that. We don't expect a lot from Paul Zipser in year one. So Denzel Valentine has playmaking ability, but if you get a lineup out there where Doug's out there for a lot of minutes on the second unit, maybe Rondo's still out there, one of the backup point guards, or even Snell's out there, then you're hurting yourself offensively, because remember, the Bulls don't have Pau Gasol down low anymore to score a lot of those points that they had in years past. Say what you want about Pau, but he was really good at getting 18 points a game usually, and some of those would come with the second unit when he was kind of headlining it sometimes. But the Bulls, that's a good idea. So I think some of this tilts on Denzel Valentine, but I want to get back to the redundancy thing. Can the Bulls make this work with Jimmy and Dwayne Wade? Because you said they have some of the same skill set and that they like to slash to the hoop.
They have the same. They have a lot of the same weaknesses, too. Neither of them are good three-point shooters.
So you're saying it's not going to work. I'm reading between the lines here, Sean. You're basically just saying it in a different way.
I'm skeptical.
You're skeptical. I think it can. Again, we've gone back to this Rondo thing so much with his passing ability and three-ball dominant players. I do think that Jimmy will still get his fair share of pick-and-roll opportunities where he can make those passes too to D-Wade. And that's the biggest thing, though, is splitting up time. And this is where the egos come into it for Jimmy,
right?
Rondo, and D-Wade. You know, like, these guys, D-Wade has so much equity built up in the game being a superstar. Rondo's obviously had run-ins in the past. Like, these are guys that'll flex their muscles a little bit and want to do it their way. I don't know how that's going to translate. I think if they all can take a step back, is it fair to say that this is, in my mind at least, tell me what you think, Sean, this might be as much mental as a physical challenge for the Bulls in doing this. And I say that with the knowledge and context that it's going to be a big physical challenge,
right,
making it work because of the three-point shooting. Is not great there for the Bulls in the backcourt. It's specifically bad with those three guys. But that mental challenge, if they can all kind of rein back and concede some ball time to others and responsibility to others and pick their spots, I think I can make it work. But if they can't, then it's going to turn into a disaster. And you already said you don't like the three-point shooting. Do you see a way on the floor it works out, just X's and O's playing style-wise, the best ideas? I mean, transition would seem like an opportunity for the Bulls.
Right, transition seems like that's where they're going to have to focus a lot of their energy on, and that would be something that would help with, you know, how much ISO they played last year. Dwayne Wade obviously is still great in transition. Rondo, you kind of hope that that's where he'd be, you know, running the offense is in transition.
Yeah, he's a brilliant passer in transition. Brilliant. And the numbers bear that out as kind of the eye test
right.
does as well. So that's one way to go for it. If you're splitting up those minutes too, I mean, do we have a idea of how many minutes we think Dwayne Wade will end up averaging per game? I mean, he was around, I think, it was a real
31.
It was a real struggle to just get him down to, like, the 31, 32
right,
area in Miami the last couple of years.
He was at 31 last year, which was by far the lowest minutes per game of his career. And so I think it's going to be in the high 20s this year. Back when he was in Miami, he never had somebody like Jimmy Butler, who's also on his team. I mean, with LeBron, like, those two guys were going to always be on the floor at the same time a lot. But, like, when it comes to, like, having another shooting guard like that, you can pair him with Dragic, and that wasn't a great pairing, but it was still, Dragic's a point guard, Wade's a two, so you're going to have them on the court a lot, but...
You got 38 minutes a night for Jimmy. That's just what Jimmy Butler does.
Yeah, he's 26. He's going to play as many minutes as he's going to play.
Shout-out reminder that in the second to final game, regular season game for the Bulls last year, second to final game is what it turned out to be after missing the playoffs, Jimmy Butler had been having some knee soreness and just told Fred Hoiberg he was going to play, I think, at the Pelicans anyway, when the Bulls were out of the playoff picture. So
Jimmy always wants to play.
Yes, Jimmy always wants
he'd
to play.
He'd play 48 minutes a game if the coaching staff would let him.
Probably so.
And Tom, and back when Tom was there, that would happen sometimes.
The famous 48-minute Jimmy Butler preseason game.
Was that against Orlando?
I think he was a rookie.
Orlando, right.
And that's famous. I think Jimmy holds, does he hold, we'll have to look this up sometime, but I think he might hold the Bulls franchise record for most minutes played in a game, too, with that 3-overtime game in Orlando where Tibbs sat him for like 2 or 3 minutes, and he played like 60 minutes there or something. But Jimmy's going to get a lot of minutes, so he's going to see time with D-Wade and Rondo, but also some of those second-string guys like Denzel Valentine and Doug McDermott. And I do think it's worth noting the Bulls, they expect a lot out of Doug McDermott again. I mean,
yeah,
when we talk about this, like, the Bulls, yesterday when we did the point guard preview, I mean, we insinuated in some ways the Bulls' season tilts on Rajon Rondo. I mean, the Bulls need everyone to play well to, like, achieve what they want to achieve. There's not a big margin of error here on this team because the pieces don't necessarily fit together great. So the Bulls need Doug McDermott. I think he shot just shy of 43% last season on three-pointers. They need him to be a marksman once again, and he'll get minutes with Jimmy Butler. And Doug and Jimmy obviously have worked out this summer in Southern California. Those guys are close, so they get along well. Hopefully, from the Bulls' perspective, more open threes for Doug McDermott on the space that Rondo, Butler, and Wade create. What are your expectations in Doug McDermott's third year as a Bull, second year in which he gets to play quite a bit probably here?
Well, I'm not worried about his shooting. That's the one thing we know he can do. Like you said, 42.5% from three-point range last year, 3.2 attempts per game. That's among the best in the league as
keep
far
shooting
as
three-point
shooting.
Shoot
but
five
like,
a game if you want, if they're
yeah,
open.
Yeah, no, absolutely,
you know?
But the thing with Doug is he has to get better at doing everything else. You can't have a guy who is 6'8". He averages, you know, last year he averaged 2.4 rebounds, 0.7 assists, 0.2 steals, 0.1 blocks.
Yeah, he's not a difference maker defensively.
He's a terrible defender.
He's not
a difference maker defensively. He's actively a terrible defender.
You think he's actually a terrible defender?
I do.
Okay,
I mean,
I don't think
he has
he's
no
actively
idea what he's. I mean, he tries hard. I mean, he it's not for lack of effort. He just has no idea where to be.
Yeah, you're correct. I would say above or below average. I don't know that he's a terrible defender. I think in the right system, I say this: he can be a competent system defender if the Bulls do their jobs. And here's where I think part of the reason Doug's struggles were magnified last year. Derrick Rose wasn't playing good defense at point guard. Pau Gasol wasn't playing good defense on the last line. And Jimmy Butler even went out and said, you know, like, he thought he could have been better defensively.
Right.
It was a team-wide disaster last year once the defensive wheels fell off. But yeah, you're right. Doug's not been a good defender by any stretch of the imagination. Has been poor, so he has to get better.
And he's not really good at anything else besides...
He's a one-dribble guy, so, like, if he can fake a shot, put one dribble on the floor, shoot that pull-up, or make one passy sign. But that's the thing Doug's got to get better at, too, I think, is the two dribbles, three dribbles to get into the heart of the defense and finish or kick it to the right guy. That's a steep learning curve. And some guys never get there in the NBA, you know what I mean? And maybe he doesn't, but the Bulls do need him to be more than just a knockdown three-point shooter. And they're looking, you could draft a guy in the first round in Denzel Valentine. That's a guy they want more out of, too, as far as a guy they expect to do many things in a way that McDermott hasn't proved to do yet. Denzel Valentine, subpar defender in college. Tom Izzo, his college coach at Michigan State, would probably tell you it's because they asked him to do so much offensively
right.
and tried to hide him defensively.
44% three-point shooter in college. And I know the college three-point line is shorter than the NBA line, but he still has that shooting range.
Yep, and he has the ability to rebound well. Big guy there, I mean, at least strong guy. Can handle the ball. They love his court vision. So I do think it'll be interesting if Denzel Valentine and Doug McDermott can just go out there and play some solid basketball. They'll get most all of the backup wing minutes, I would think, because the Bulls, you know, they got rid of Mike Dunleavy in the offseason, let him go to Cleveland, I believe.
Yeah.
So they have lost some minutes in that regard. And
is this the year Tony Snell puts it all together?
I mean, we've mentioned this before. We don't need to harp on it. But, I mean, he could still get some opportunity, but Tony has had his opportunities before. I expect Denzel Valentine, Doug McDermott to be far ahead on the pecking order of opportunity to prove themselves early and often. And the question is, I mean, how are they going to fit around Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade as well? Valentine, I think because he does a few more things with the ball, I think will be an interesting fit to see how he meshes. Just gives them more options, you know, cutting, maybe a two-man pick-and-roll game. He can spread the floor a little bit if Dwayne or Jimmy has the ball. So those will be things to watch as well. Defensively, Sean, what do you think just as a whole for the Bulls' backcourt and wings specifically here as we're previewing them?
Well, the one positive, I think, of the Wade and Butler pairing is that having a guy like Wade is going to take a lot of pressure off of Jimmy offensively.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's going to be able to, because he did say, again, we touched on this before, but he said at points last year that he was maybe not putting in the kind of effort we could have on the defensive end. And he, you know, when he's locked in, he's one of the best wing defenders in the league. He's
Jimmy Butler's first team all NBA potential ceiling. If he's locked in,
yes,
first team all defense, I should say. If he's locked in defensively all season long, he has that potential.
Yeah, and so if he I think if he is able to expend more energy on that end, and that's the kind of thing they're going to need him to do, because even though he's one of their best offensive players too, he's the only guy out of this group of wings that is really a reliable defender. And so if he can focus more on the defensive end, and that means, you know, Wade handles a lot of the scoring, you know, inside driving the basket, and then Doug is knocking down shots, Denzel is contributing.
That's where the ego comes in. Like, Jimmy was over 20 points per game last year, I think 2 years in a row now. I mean, could you possibly see Jimmy saying, hey, I'm going to cede a little bit of that offensive role to others, average 17.5 points a game, and I'm just going to be an animal on defense and mess up other teams' defensive plans? Or is he at the point in his career, the stature, where it's his team, he feels like he's got to be the leading scorer, he likes seeing his name up there among the top, 15 scorers in the NBA, stuff like that, being in the All-Star game again? Do you think Jimmy has that in him? Do you think that's best for the Bulls? I think it might be if Dwayne Wade's healthy for most of the season, and they do the thing where they rest him as a precaution more than anything else, he's a guy that can still go out there and get you 19 points a game in a fairly efficient fashion as long as he makes sure he's shooting toward the hoop and not on three-pointers. Because Dwayne Wade, we should point out how bad the Bulls' backcourt shooting is to start, the three-point shooting. He made 7 three-pointers last year. He made 7 for the season. In total, the entire season. And I'm pretty sure Klay Thompson's done that in a quarter a lot of times in his life again, for emphasis. Like,
you know, it's pretty.
Like, people are still mesmerized by this. He just didn't shoot them. He didn't make them when he did shoot them.
He is in 13 seasons, Dwayne Wade is a career 28.4%.
And this is three-point shooter. This matters because the Bulls have to rely on their backcourt for a lot of scoring this year.
Well, except for randomly in the playoffs last year, he randomly shot, yes, like, he made like 8.
True, like it was like big game D. Wade stepping up there. But like, you're going from Derrick Rose.
He shot
Rose,
52% on threes in the playoffs last year.
You're going from Derrick Rose to Rondo at point guard, so that's a scoring drop. You're going from Pau Gasol as your starting center
to
Robin Lopez. Big scoring drop. Like, this, the scoring load immediately has to get focused on the wing players, you know? Like, you're not expecting Robin Lopez to even average 12 points a game, you know?
No.
Like, he's like an 8-point tonight.
That's
guy,
what
probably.
He. That's not, like, what he is, though. He's a rim protector and a rebounder. That's part of
it. But I mean, Nico, if he starts, and we think he probably has an inside track of starting, we'll talk about him more in the big man preview the next day. But still, like, that's backcourt scoring the Bulls have to get. You've talked about staggering the minutes. I mean, the more I think about this just off the top of my head here, like, I'm talking myself into, like, Doug McDermott needing to score more points. You know what I mean? And I know, I think I said before that would happen, I think, if Nico can't step up into a bigger role, because he seems like the obvious candidate.
And so you
to
think
score
so
more
you
points.
Think then that, you know, but then they, maybe they play Doug as a smaller four? Is that what you're thinking?
No,
or?
Not. I mean, just him get a lot of backcourt minutes as the main sub for both Jimmy and D-Wade. I mean, D-Wade projects as a shooting guard. Jimmy slides over to small forward, but once you start subbing guys in and out, Jimmy can play either spot. Doug can kind of shift between either spot, too. I think you'd rather him guard small forwards, which is a consideration to have because they're not quite as quick. But fascinating that the Bulls, their scoring needs to come from the backcourt, no doubt this season. But anything else just in the backcourt stick out to you, Sean? Any storyline at all? I mean, we've talked about the egos here with D-Wade and Jimmy Butler, and everyone's on record saying it's Jimmy Butler's team, but you still got to roll the ball out there, and then sometimes the basketball decides whose team it is. So that's like feelings start coming into play once the basketball gets tipped off.
Right. I think that the one guy, we talked a little bit about him, but I think with Denzel Valentine, I'm really interested to see what he does in his first year, how much he's able to contribute, how many minutes he gets, if he's able to knock down the three-pointer consistently, because he did not look good, really, at Summer League. And Summer League is the kind of thing where if somebody looks good at Summer League, you can't really read too much into it, because like Josh Selby won Summer League MVP 1 year. But if somebody looks bad at Summer League, it's a little bit worrying.
Yeah, okay, that's a fair point.
But
very fair point.
But I think Denzel, like, he's the kind of guy where like he's coachable enough, and he also
he made two huge shots at Summer League too to win him a championship.
They wouldn't have the Summer League championship without him. It's true. That parade at Hoffman Estates is still being planned.
Well, though, this is interesting. First close game of the season. Who do they draw up to play for? You know, with the game on the line. Jimmy Butler, Dwayne Wade, say everyone's fresh, everyone has fair matchups, no one's in foul trouble. That's going to tell you a lot. That will tell you a lot. Not just what happens, not just who they draw it up for, but how the Bulls react afterward in the locker room to the first time this season something goes awry late in a game.
See, to me, it's not the first time. It's because the first time they can just say this was just the play that was there to be made at the time, and especially if it works.
Well, they'll say that for all eternity, won't they?
But if it was, if we see a pattern emerging where it's consistently like it's only Butler that's getting those plays, or it's only Wade that's getting those plays over the course of a month or two, then we're gonna, you know, it's gonna start to be like, okay, how do the other guys feel about this?
Well, this is important because I believe it was an early season game last year at New Jersey where the Bulls ran like
Brooklyn.
Excuse me. Yes, thank you. That's why you have podcast partners at Brooklyn against the Nets, where the Bulls ran like 8 straight plays through Jimmy Butler in crunch time, and Derrick Rose kind of stood in the corner. Like, the whole starting five was on the court, you know what I mean? And that was like first 3, 4, 5 games of the season. The Bulls won the game. Jimmy was spectacular in crunch time that game. Not that the Nets defense usually puts up much resistance, but still, it was kind of a delineation point to, hey, you know, this isn't just give Derek the ball in crunch time like they always did before with under Tibbs. It was always like, Derek Rose is healthy again. The Bulls got the closer back. You know what I mean? He shook his ankle and knee injuries tonight and is out there finishing off for the Bulls in crunch time. That went to Jimmy Butler. And I mean, by the end of the year, Jimmy and Derek obviously didn't see eye to eye on the basketball court by any stretch of the imagination. And so things like that matter, and it will matter early in the season for these Bulls the first time it happens. So I think that's one of the most interesting things to point out, as we touched on. But we'll start to wrap it up here a little bit, but we did want to point out just a quick update. We just brought up Derrick Rose in the terms of being a former Bull. Of course, he is a current New York Knicks point guard. Now, quick update in the civil lawsuit alleging rape against him and two other friends. The judge ruled that the accuser needs to make her name public for the civil trial that's set to start October 4th. So that's just a small, quick update. Derrick Rose's lawyers had been hoping for and contending, and that ruling, I guess you should say, went their way.
It makes me think there's probably going to be a settlement, because if you read the interviews that she did with Think Progress and some of the other interviews that she did, a big part of the reason that she, that this woman was wanting to remain anonymous was because her family has no idea about this. And so I think the idea that once it gets to trial, she's going to have to put her name out there. And that's something that she doesn't really want to do, as we've seen. So I'm thinking that might mean there's a greater chance of there being a settlement.
Yeah, there's certainly reasons on both sides to settle. So we'll keep an eye on that. And certainly all your Bulls news as well. Not much hard Bulls news lately. We'll get all that Monday when training camp opens. Wednesday evening, we will tape a big man preview. So all
Mirotic,
our hot takes on Mirotic, Robin Lopez,
Chris Felicio,
Bobby Portis, Taj Gibson, Chris Felicio. We'll have those coming for you Thursday. A training camp umbrella preview of I don't know what we'll talk about, but we'll figure it out at some point. And then the season gets kicked off pretty soon. As always, please follow us on Twitter at Lockdown Bulls, at Cody Westerlund, at Hiken to stay up to date. Email us at LockdownBulls@gmail.com with any basketball questions, any advertising inquiries. Follow us, subscribe
Facebook.
To us. Follow us on Facebook, subscribe to us on iTunes, leave a 5-star review. Find us on Audio Boom, Stitcher, Google Play, everywhere else podcasts are found, as always. And follow the entire Locked On Podcast Network for whatever other favorite teams you have on the NFL side. NFL season's rolling. Great content from all those guys. And until next time, we'll keep you updated. And thanks for listening.